Good afternoon, everyone, from a very chilly Wellington. Thank you so much for joining us. It's my great pleasure to introduce Professor Heather McLeod, who all of you will know from a very cold Hamner. We're going to kick off very quickly, but I just wanted to thank Heather very much for progressing this very important piece of work. And many of you, in fact all of you, have contributed to the first part of this, which was developing the Hospice New Zealand demand model, and we're very grateful for that. And of course Heather and the Ministry now have taken this forward, and we now have a national model. And so Heather, I'll just hand straight back over to you, and we look forward very much to you presenting what is a very important piece of work. So thank you.
Mary, thank you very much. It's been about a three-year project in the making, and it was something that I started for the Palliative Care Council. And in fact, huge thanks to Mary for ensuring that when the Palliative Care Council was closed down, that this work could be continued and brought to completion. So it was delivered to the Palliative Care Advisory Panel and the Ministry at the end of June, and I'm now starting to speak about it in various places, so really delighted today to be able to share this with hospices. Slide two, the outline for today. In fact, I was hoping to send you a quick slide of deep snow here in Hanmer, but the snow hasn't started yet. So we'll go straight into looking at the methodology. I'll then talk about the historic need. I'll look backwards. And then I'll look forwards for much of the presentation, looking at the need for palliative care, the need for hospice care, and then a little bit at the end about projections of place of death and some of the policy that is associated with that. So slide three, let's start with methodology. Slide four, the first time that we determined the need for palliative care in New Zealand, it was done by the Palliative Care Council. And if Wayne Naylor is in the room at Hospice Waikato, he did an extraordinary job in published in June 2011 of that first national need in New Zealand. The number that you need to keep in mind from that report is that in 2006, which is in fact now 10 years ago, the mid-range estimate of the deaths that were amenable to palliative care was around 56%. And, you know, we look at that and we say, gosh, that was 10 years ago. That's one of the good reasons, of course, to revise the methodology. And on slide five, I've got four other reasons that we looked at in terms of wanting to revise this. Firstly, the period of projection in the initial work was to 2016 and 2026. And that's not really far enough to take into account what I've shown many of you about the baby boomers coming through, the increase in the number of deaths coming. So we really did want to do some projections that went out a lot further. Secondly, a lot of healthcare planning is done on the basis of a rate per 100,000 of population, and this work was done, the initial work was done that way too. But that assumes that the number of deaths relative to the population will remain constant, and I'll show you a slide in a few moments. That's not the case. And all the work that you see today is done on the basis of deaths, not population. I make the point because when you're talking to your DHBs or you're talking to planners in the area, where your hospice is, they'll be used to doing work on a rate per 100,000 of population. Very important that they start understanding that they need to see what the deaths are doing. And as I said, I'll show you a slide in a moment. The third point on slide five, separate adult and child lists. Most of the work internationally has been done with separate lists under age 20. But that does leave a lot of anomalies, and we felt that it wasn't appropriate in New Zealand because it was cutting out half of congenital deaths. It's part of the success of the health system that people are living longer with those conditions. And then finally, I'm going to show you a slide about the pattern at older ages. So let's look at four slides quickly, which just reinforce those 4 points. Slide six, this one you've seen from me many, many times, but just really important. The 2026 that the old projections went to is in the middle of that first period between the blue lines. That only takes us about a quarter of the way in the peak of deaths that are coming. And when you look at the model, and I will describe two different sets of projections in the model, one is to 2038, that's to the blue line on the right. But remember, when we get to that point, we're only halfway there. And there is another set of projections in the model which takes us all the way through to 2068, which takes us over that peak of deaths. So really important that we do use this to look quite far out, particularly for workforce implications. On slide seven, the crude death rates. This is this point about deaths relative to population. You know, it's an odd thing. In public health, we've got so used to the idea that deaths relative to population are going down. It's been going down for hundreds of years, that people quite often write about it as if it will continue. In fact, there's a Treasury document out there from a few years ago that simply says, and this continues. But it doesn't. If you look at what Statistics New Zealand has shown us, if we look at deaths relative to the population, we're kind of at a low point at the moment, and it's going to start tracking back up again. And it looks like by the time we get to around 2068, it'll be back at the sort of levels we last saw in the 1940s and 50s. And I make the point to people, it's not a failure of medicine when we start seeing more deaths. It's in fact part of the success of medicine. People have been living so much longer, but there is an end. And this is finally as the, particularly the baby boomers, begin to reach their oldest years. Slide eight is the evidence around the congenital deaths in New Zealand, the big red lines going down on the female and male groups, show just how many deaths we were cutting out if we only took them up to age 20. And again, this is really a story about the success of the health system. People are living much longer with congenital conditions like cystic fibrosis, like Down syndrome, and so on. And this means that, in fact, in this new version, we're taking all those deaths in. We're not cutting them off at age 20 any longer. Slide nine, the final slide about why we're revising these numbers. This is by age and gender. As you know, I do much of my work by age and gender. This is the original estimates in New Zealand done on newer data, but it shows what there's this peak of deaths for females around about age 55 to 60, peak for males around 65, but then it goes off quite dramatically. That's because the original list, based on some work done by Rosenwax and McNamara in Australia, used only 10 conditions that needed palliative care. And those conditions, although they had a little bit of the Alzheimer's in there, they didn't have much around the rest of dementia and frailty. And so the old patterns end up giving us a very paradoxical result into the future, that as deaths get older, which I've shown you many times, we would end up with a lower need for palliative care, which just doesn't make any sense. So major reason was to get a better shape to this need for palliative care at older ages. On slide 10, I've got a list of all the papers that have come out since that initial work was done, and there's been an enormous amount of new material published about the need for palliative care. The one in the middle there, Murtagh in the UK, Fliss Murtagh, that's a really important paper. It's also, that methodology has been used in Ireland and Germany as well. And we did a lot of work thinking about whether we would want to use that directly. And I'll show you in a few slides later why we didn't. But there's been additional work in Spain. There's been work at an international level. And in fact, Rosenwax and McNamara did an update of their study, which was published just a few months ago. Slide 11 is what we then decided to do in New Zealand. Top left-hand corner are the two sets of projections that I talk about, the one to 2068 and the one to 2038. Those come straight from Statistics New Zealand. Bottom left-hand corner, the Ministry of Health mortality data. Many of you have seen the slides that I did on the earlier study from 2000 to 2010. We updated that work early this year, and so if you've heard me speak in the last 2 or 3 months, you will have seen the newer material, which goes through to 2013. And I'm actually really thrilled that we had that extra 3 years of data, because there have been some quite dramatic trends in terms of the place of death. And so if you haven't seen some of those figures, please do be in touch with me and I can let you have them. What I did there was to take the cause of death and place of death, combine them in a need for palliative care, and then we combine these patterns of need for palliative care with those projections of deaths to get the national model of need. So I'll be taking you through some of those results in a moment. Slide 12 just shows you that classic cause of death picture that you know so well from me. Just wanted to say that I did test this across different time periods, also tested it across the regions in order to see that this shape was stable. And part of the decision at the end of it was to use information from 2009 to 2013, so just the last 5 years, to get there are a few minor changes in the pattern, particularly in the place of death, and I wanted to use the most up-to-date version of the pattern that was stable. The slide 13 is the place of death picture that you also know really well. And slide 14 shows how the two were combined. So this was new work for this New Zealand model. It's something that I pioneered for hospices when we did that hospice need or hospice demand model in December and January recently. And this national model follows a very similar line of thinking. Firstly, the neoplasms, all deaths from neoplasms, cancers, are included regardless of the place of death. Then for maternity, no deaths are included at all. Actually, very few maternal deaths here in New Zealand. The perinatal and congenital, as I said, we worked with Starship on, and so that part had been done already. But the other parts, the circulatory system, the other conditions, and the question of how much of the external causes, that was work done by a clinical panel in the last few months. And I'll talk to who they were in a moment. Slide 15, the background to a lot of this work was the work done for the Palliative Care Council. And I wanted to just acknowledge the enormously important work done by Kate Gibb and Michael Boyd. Michael, as you know, is also on the board of Hospice New Zealand. They did really important work on palliative care in residential care. And so the decision to include all deaths in residential care, regardless of the cause, comes from their thinking and their work. On the pediatric, adolescent, perinatal, and congenital conditions, I had the great privilege of working closely with Ross Drake and Karen Bycroft on it. I spent some time up at Starship with them, and so all of those areas were covered off in discussions with them and data I used with them. Slide 16 shows us the clinical panel that was convened a few months ago, and I wanted you to just see how many hospice people were involved in this. Simon Allen from Arahanui, Kate Grundy, who's also attached to Nurse Maud, Rod McLeod, who is a great friend of Hospice New Zealand, Carol McCullum, who was in Hawke's Bay and is now at hospice at Waipuna Hospice. And of course, was really delighted that Wayne Naylor agreed to be part of this panel as well and bring his expertise. If we go back to the earlier work, Rod McLeod and Wayne Naylor were involved at the time, and so it was really fabulous to have their thinking continuing into this version. And the clinical panel was also set up to have a particular focus and help me on hospital palliative care. And so we had Jonathan Adler from Wellington, Simon Allen, who doubles as working at Palmerston North Hospital, Kate Grundy at Canterbury, or Christchurch Hospital, and Carol McCullum, who had been working in the hospital in Hawke's Bay as well. So we had really fascinating discussions about how palliative care in hospital differed from palliative care in the other settings, and that was an important part of the final lists that we put together. So slide 17 is the same picture you've seen of place of death and cause of death, but with the percentages that we have covered. So these are the percentages in each of those cells that go into the final need for palliative care. And the bottom right of that, you'll see a number 79.4. So if we look back historically, 79%, shade under 80%, was the need for palliative care based on the historic data. That's up from the 56% I talked about at the beginning. And that's very similar to the kinds of increases we've seen in the work done in the United Kingdom, for example, and some of the other newer work. But what was the most important thing from my perspective was slide 18, is that when we'd put all of these different cells together, out came what I regard as a really lovely shape for the need for palliative care. Again, females on the left, men on the right. It's a little bit bouncy in the childhood years, but that's because we have so few deaths there. But the important thing is that for under ones, it's high, and that's all the perinatal conditions and some congenital. It's lowest in the early adult years, and particularly it's lower for men, and that's due to so many deaths at those ages being from accidents and suicides. But then from age 20 onwards, it begins to climb, both for men and for women. And for women, it's got a kind of saddle at the top and increases right at the end again. For men, it's a little bit smoother at the end. But for both of them, it begins to increase in the later years. And that's really important in terms of an aging population. So I was really thrilled with this picture and shared it delightedly with the clinical panel one Sunday morning and then refined all of it. Now, slide 19 shows you that same blue shape, but with another paler blue shape, which I call the maximal need. We just wanted in the final planning model to take out only the maternity, the external causes of death that are sudden, and then leave all the rest. And that's sort of, if you like, I think the dark blue is the best one to use for planning purposes, but it does help to know what that paler blue version is as well. So we have the need for palliative care, we have the maximal need for palliative care, and then we have total deaths. And those three things are very prominent in the final model. Slide 20, the last bit about methodology that I'm going to speak about this morning, just shows the shape of this new version compared to some other methodologies. The yellow line is the original work done in 2011, and that's the one that I said came off very strongly at older ages. You can see how much better our new dark blue shape is relative to that. The red line on this picture is the Murtagh shape. And it was quite interesting that what we got was very similar to hers for women. We have a slightly different version of it for men, but I think we've captured the New Zealand situation a lot better. One of the things that had always worried us about the Murtagh figures was that she included all circulatory system deaths. And we were concerned that quite a big group of those are very sudden and that there wouldn't have been the opportunity to provide palliative care. So our version has actually got more of other conditions and fewer cardiac deaths than hers, but it comes out at a remarkably similar shape for women at the end of the day. Right, that's enough on methodology. Slide 21, I'm going to quickly show you what happens if we look back and we look at this in a number of different ways and see what the need was. Slide 22, looking back each year for the 14 years of the study at what the need for palliative care was. And this illustrates best why I don't focus very much on that 79.4 you saw before, because actually it changes each year. Over the time period of the study, if you look at the first bar, which is the year 2000, 78% of deaths needed palliative care. By the end of the study, 80.7. So it's gone up quite substantially just in those 14 years. And that's because the population is aging, and you saw that shape that goes up a little bit with age. So don't hold on to the idea of 80%. It's a broad indication, but it does change as the population gets older. On slide 23, it also changes depending on the age of the population you're looking at. This is all the DHBs in the country, grouped by region. And you can see there are different proportions. The DHB that has the lowest proportion of need, according to this, was West Coast. And that's because they've got a very high external cause, a lot of suicides and a lot of road deaths, relatively speaking. So that makes it look as if it's a lower need. The highest ones, I was actually expecting Nelson Marlborough to be highest because of the age of that population. But it turns out that Southern DHB, it's in the fourth group along, 82.0 was their need for palliative care historically. So, yes, it does come out very differently in different parts of the country. Slide 24 shows us the need by ethnicity and gender. And I want to show you this, and I want to ask you to be very careful about how you interpret slide 24 if you ever show it. On the left, we've got female, then the next group is male, and then we've got the total to the right. And then within each group, we've got Maori, Pacific, Asian, and other. It looks as if, historically, the other group, which includes Pākehā, had a higher need for palliative care than the others. It doesn't mean that when you're faced with patients of different ethnicity, that Pākehā need more palliative care than Māori. That's not the way to interpret this. What you have to understand is that this is a function of the age at which deaths happen and a function of the cause of death and place of death. And so what it is saying is that Māori had causes of death, places of death, and age of death which weren't as conducive to palliative care. It's true when we talk about the entire population. It is never true when you talk about the individual in front of you. And in fact, it's the same if you look at the list of conditions that we included. Yes, in the final technical report, we've published what that list of conditions was. But again, I make the point, never use that list to say this person gets palliative care and that one doesn't. It's at a national level, looking across a whole group of people, it's the best way for us to determine the overall need. At a patient level, it is always about the person's need and whether they can be helped by palliative care. So just be careful about saying Māori have a lower need for palliative care. That's not true in individual cases. As a group, historically, it was because of the causes of death. Just one last thought about slide 24. You can see that most clearly on the right if you look at female and male. female, the need for palliative care historically came out at 82.3%, male 76.4%. That's entirely a function of men having more external causes of death and more suicides, and therefore driving down the need for palliative care relative to what women experience. So if you can understand the gender difference there, you can understand why you need to be careful on the ethnicity figures as well. Slide 25 looks at the deprivation index, and a similar, this is quite complex to interpret, but the same underlying thing is going on here. What happens when you look at it historically is that the highest, the areas with the higher levels of deprivation, 9 and 10, have the lowest need for palliative care. It's because of the causes of death, the ages of death, places of death, that that is driven. So, again, just be careful. This deprivation index in slide 26 has some really tough things in it to interpret, one of which is that most deaths happen for those who are in areas deprivation 7 and 8. And some of you have heard me say, Maren Gott and I have had a long discussion about this one, and we think that it's because some of the facilities, particularly residential aged care facilities, are on the edge of suburbs, and they may end up inadvertently in deprivation areas 7 and 8, and that that's the reason that it looks like those areas are heavier in deaths. It's a complex issue, and unlike other areas of health where there's quite a straightforward relationship between deprivation and the need for more care, just be careful in palliative care. It's not always the case. Right, let's get on to some simpler bits. Slide 27 is a picture by cause of death, and it just summarizes something of what I've said about all neoplasms being in circulatory conditions. Around 78% of them are in the New Zealand system. Maternity, perinatal, congenital, that's mostly perinatal and congenital conditions there. Other conditions, only just under 74% of them. And external causes, we do include a little bit of. The clinical panel was quite firm in the conviction that there are some deaths from external causes where the person doesn't die immediately. And we do see some of those coming into hospice. Some of them do go into aged care settings. But those are what we call the sequelae of external causes, where it may take some time before the death actually occurs, and those ones we have included in the final version. Slide 28 does a similar sort of thing, but with place of death, and by definition, all deaths in hospice ICU are included, all deaths in residential care are included, deaths in public hospital, it comes out just under 74% of them are included. And in private residences, about 65% of all deaths. And that's a bit of a reflection of some of them are sudden deaths, but it's also a reflection, of course, of where hospice is very active. If we look at slide 29, it's a busy slide, but that's got cause of death and place of death together. And that's where you can see very clearly the first group is neoplasms, and all neoplasms, regardless of setting, are in. So that's all 100%. The second group, circulatory system, shows very well what we did in terms of a different proportion of deaths in public hospital compared to private residents. So whereas for the circulatory deaths, 48% of them in private residences were included, about 80% of them in public hospital were. That comes from the clinical panel, from their experience of when they're being called in, where they can assist, and the ability to be with people who have been admitted. So, yes, I'm really thrilled about how that has come together, because it reflects these different places of care and the different causes of death in a much clearer way, I think, than some of the other work. Right. Slide 30 is an interesting one, because if one of the, if we take all public hospital deaths and we take all residential care deaths and subtract those from the total need for palliative care, then the balance are effectively deaths happening in the community. And so that's an interesting thing for planners to be able to look at. So that's what this slide does. The dark blue part is the need in public hospitals. The green funnel, as you've come to know it, is the need in residential care. And the balance is the yellow color, which is the need in community of various places. But I want to be very clear, that yellow part is not the hospice need for care, because as we've learned from the hospice data over the last few years, hospice patients die in public hospitals, in residential care, at home, and in other places in the community. So this is not completely hospice care yet. And I make that point in slide 31. We need to be much more careful about what hospice care covers. And also, I want you to remember, one of the limitations of this work is that it uses place of death. It's not place of usual care. And you know, we don't have anything better than the place of death to work with at the moment, but it is, and you're right at the end, I'll talk perhaps a little about it, I want to be doing a lot more work on understanding place of care, not just place of death, because we've got these really complex things that happen in the trajectories at the end of life, people moving between residential care and hospital, between private residence and hospice, between private residence and hospital, and you know other more complex versions of that. And so this doesn't tell you where the care is that hospices might provide. So what we've done in slide 32, the hospice need for palliative care that we had in that demand model that you've had over the last few months has been, that same thinking has been brought through. This is just a version of it showing what goes into it. And basically, it has all deaths from cancers, all deaths in residential care, all deaths in hospice, IPU, and some deaths in private residence. And the total for that comes out at 60% of all deaths. So if you think overall, we're at about 80% of all deaths for all palliative care. Hospice need, including helping residential care, comes out at about 60% of all deaths. There is a smaller version of that too. If you exclude residential care, then the hospice care comes out somewhere in the 30s, 35 or so, I think, 36 actually, as we'll see in a moment. Yeah, there it is on the slide. The lower need for hospice care, 36.6, and an upper need of 60.7%. That starts becoming very interesting. You know, Mary, just a point to make at this stage, when we looked at how many deaths hospice was seeing of the total deaths in financial 2015, it came out at 32%. That's very close to this need for hospice care of 36.6 that I've shown here, the lower level. If we add back in all the residential care deaths, it takes it up to 60. And so those are the kind of benchmarks that you'll want to keep in mind when you're looking at your own services. Slide 33 shows those two versions. The orange line has the lower hospice need for care, excluding residential care. The yellow line has it, including the residential care. You can see the huge difference at the end, at the higher ages for both men and women, of including residential care deaths. And of course, all of you have gone through thinking this in preparing your service proposals. Yes. But that orange line is very similar to what we see where hospice traditionally has had deaths in the middle adult ages and not many deaths at the older ages. it's this adding of assistance to residential care that changes it quite dramatically at the highest ages. So, right, that's enough of looking backwards. Now let me look forwards at what we get when we look at the projected need for care. And the first slide on that, slide 35, just a reminder that when you look at the 2038 deaths, you're only halfway there. And so I'm going to start by looking at the deaths all the way through to 2068. And slide 36 shows us that. One of the interesting things about going all the way through to 2068 is that Statistics New Zealand give us a range of projections based on a whole series, or they're allowing all the assumptions that they use in the projections to be modified, and they come out with a range, and that funnel expands a little bit as you get to further away. But you know, look at the bottom line, the fifth percentile, that's the lowest estimate, or close to the lowest estimate, is the dark green line, or the green line. The turquoise line, the top one, is the 95th. And really useful to see that there's not a lot of difference there between those lines at the end. Slide 37, similar sort of line with different scenarios of migration in New Zealand. And the bottom one is a very low mortality scenario. That's one that says people live even longer than they're doing at the moment. And so what it does is it pushes the deaths out much further. I think there's a chance of the opposite happening, that we have more deaths, the obesity epidemic, antibiotic-resistant bugs and things like that, potentially another world war. There could be a lot of things that make this different. And so if deaths are higher than are projected at the moment, that simply means more work and this peak coming in closer than we are expecting at the moment. These very long projections are not as much use for you on the ground as they are for workforce planning. So these are essentially done for the ministry and for Health Workforce New Zealand to have a good look at what we might need into the future. And slide 38 shows that need and how it grows. Slide 39 shows that on a shorter time horizon. And this shorter time horizon is the one that DHBs use for planning. So this is the one that I actually spend more time on, because it's much easier to see what's going on here. If you look at this, the number of deaths needing palliative care on slide 39, 24,000 or so in 2016, up to 37,000 by the end of the period. Deaths over this period go up by, let's call it 48%. Palliative care need goes up by 51%. A little bit more, and that's that effect of the aging of the population over the time period. But just be very careful, that is the national need. Each region is different. And on slide 40, really important graph showing on a different scale what those differences are. On the left-hand side, you'll see this graph only begins at 78%. So I don't like drawing graphs that don't begin at zero, but it does help us see the detail here. Nationally, the need for palliative care at the moment is just is a bit over 80%. It's 80.9, and it grows over this time to 82.8. So that's, again, that aging of the population. The need goes up as a proportion of all deaths. I've put on here the regional pictures, and the northern region has the lowest proportion of need at the moment, but the fastest growing one. South Island goes up strongly, but the two areas with the highest proportional need for palliative care are, in fact, Midland and Central. That's in as a proportion of their total deaths. When you look at the actual numbers on slide 41, that's where you'll see the northern region, the largest region, has the most deaths, and it increases quite dramatically. South Island is next, followed by Midland and Central. Very important, the model, spreadsheet model, obviously has all these figures in it. You can look at it by region. You can look nationally by region and by DHB and see what you need. I mentioned to the team as we started out for the first time in a long time, I've put a duplicate slide in. So please ignore 42, and I'll come back to it in a moment. Slide 43, projected need for palliative care in hospitals. Because of the really good work that the hospital team had done, we were able to isolate need in hospitals, need in residential care, need for hospice separately in each of these areas. So we've got need in hospitals going up from about 7,300 deaths to 10,000. It goes up slower than total deaths over the period. Slide 44, though, if we put hospitals in dark blue and residential care in green, here's where the dramatic difference is. The need for palliative care projected to increase 37.5% in public hospitals, but 84.2% in residential care by 2038. That's huge. I presented these figures to DHB Shared Services and the Aged Residential Care Steering Group about a week ago. And, you know, this is the important part of where DHBs will be negotiating between deaths in public hospital, deaths in residential care, and then talking to you, I would hope, about what you can do for those people. So slide 45 juxtaposes deaths for hospice in two ways. Total hospice care, excluding all deaths other than neoplasms, and then hospice care, including all deaths in residential care. And you'll see what happens is that the hospice care, in its kind of traditional form, increases by 22.4% over this time period. But if you include all the residential care deaths as well, then we see a much stronger increase. So, yes, it's really important that we, in fact, it goes up by about 52% over that time period. So important that you're looking at all of those different figures as you take your planning into account. And here, slide 46, the model of need. It's going to look quite familiar to you because I used some of the architecture that we'd used for the hospice model and took that into the national model. It's got national planning from 2016 to 2068, which is the longer period. That's new. And then on the 2016 to 2038 part, in the past you had just one page of results. I've now given you three pages so that you can look at the national, the regional, and the local version simultaneously. But some of the things that hospices asked for and we pioneered, like being able to make up your own local region by just a proportion of DHBs, that remains. The new part as well is that each section has got hospitals, residential care, and hospice care as separate items as well. So, yes, I made recommendations that the spreadsheet be made freely available, and I'm really delighted that Mary has had that circulated. Right. Just some final thoughts before we leave all of this, because actually, you know, you'll get most of your figures out of the spreadsheet model. I just wanted to say a few more things about place of death in this work. Slide 47. If we look at the projected place of death, on the left is the year 2016. On the right is the year 2038. To 2016, residential care makes up 34% of deaths. That's projected to grow to 43% of deaths by 2038. Hospice inpatient unit deaths proportionately possibly might come down, and proportionately in private residence are expected to come down. That's just a function of what we're using in here. And part of putting numbers on the table is to have people have discussions about what it is they want and how they want to arrange services and models of care. If I look at that in a slightly different way in slide 48, you can see the yellow line, private residence deaths, do increase, but not by a lot. Deaths in public hospital by more, and deaths in green in residential care up the strongest. Deaths in hospice IPU, not expected in actual numbers to go up a large amount. That's to 2038. If I show you to 2068 in slide 49, that difference between the green and blue, the residential care and the public hospital, becomes huge. Residential care almost becomes double the public hospital levels. Will this come to fruition? Probably not. This is dependent on those historic patterns staying exactly the same. One of the things about producing models of the future is that enables conversations, and very often things then change direction. This doesn't say anything about the capacity, whether government wants to fund care in residential care to that extent, whether there are other models of care that keep deaths closer to private residences, all those kinds of questions. But if nothing changes, this is what would come from an older population. And it comes back to slide 50. Slide 50 is that picture showing public hospitals in blue at the bottom, the green expanding funnel of residential care, the balance in the community, and I've overlaid this time where the deaths are currently happening. That's the black line. And it's that, so many of the deaths are now happening at older ages, and you've seen from me many, many times how deaths are expected to get even older. And at the moment, older deaths happen in residential care, less in public hospitals, but very few of them. Look at how small the yellow part of it is at those oldest ages. Slide 51, the health strategy that's just been completed says, theme two, all care closer to home. And I know when this was presented up in Auckland recently, and Claire Lawrence was in the room, she made it clear that closer to home could include residential care because that has become home for people at that point. However, some of these trajectories are not quite that simple. People don't necessarily go into rest homes and then progress all the way through. We're seeing many much more complex movements of people to public hospital, say from home to public hospital, and then into residential care because they need to be moved out of the hospital. So we need to do a lot more work thinking about this. I also just want to make the point in slide 51 that despite so many of you writing in on the New Zealand Health Strategy asking to have dying included in the strategy, it's not in the tagline. There's no dying well. And there are only there's less than five mentions of either death or palliative care in the entire document. It's almost as if we've become invisible again in the overall health strategy. However, slide 52, I think this is one of the most interesting pieces of work that's come out of the Ministry of Health in recent years. Some work led by Martin Tobias and his colleagues about the periods that people can expect to live needing assistance. And I've put up on this slide both female and male figures. Let's just quickly look at them. Female, age 65, can expect to live another 10.6 years on average, and that's about half her remaining life. She needs 10.7 years with some assistance, non-daily assistance for some time, but daily assistance for the final 4.8 years of her life. And a male New Zealander, a little bit less, 10.2 years independently, and then 8.7 years with functional limitations, needing a final 3.1 years of daily assistance. That's what's driving this use of residential care. And it's really important how you see this evolving. I think anything that says you can push more care closer to home, if you look at slide 53, I think one of the most challenging bits of research to be done, and I mentioned this to Auckland, the Te Arai Research Day recently, this impact on whānau and carers. This is a document that the Ontario health people did called The Reality of Caring, Distress Among the Caregivers of Home Care Patients. And I think we haven't yet begun to understand enough about what it means to push more care closer to home, both in terms of what it means for volunteers, for hospices, for the whānau themselves, for carers living at home. So yes, that's where I think research has to happen in the future before, as we look at these complex models of care and try and decide what we want for New Zealand in the future. Final slide, everybody, just some caveats and updates. There is a full technical report. You're welcome to have it. I know Rachel has got it, and you can get it directly from Hospice New Zealand if you need it. It's long, but it needs to set out all the technical things that went into this projection so that anyone following behind can do it if I'm not here to do it. Caveats and updates. Projections are not predictions. These are guidelines and an indication of trend. They're not forecasts. That's just standard understanding of them. I've given the Ministry of Health and Palliative Care Advisory Panel a lot of information about how often I think this should be updated. But the most important thing is the final bullet point on slide 54. These projections are based on the number of deaths, not the whole period of care. And I've said it in several forums, we need to do work on trajectories of care, and we've put in some funding to do work on trajectories of care using some hospice patient information from the PALCARE data. Rachel and I spoke to the PALCARE users group a few days ago and really hope that we can take this forward, because what you've got in front of you, yes, absolutely, they are new projections, they are helpful, they can help your DHBs, they can help you and your boards, but they're not the whole story. We need to understand more about the periods of care and the resources needed over those periods in order to take this further. The last slide, slide 55, has got my contact details. I'd be more than happy to answer questions by email. Copy in Hospice New Zealand when you do, and particularly Rachel Crombie, and be more than happy to answer questions directly at some point.